Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. We have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we hope, against hope, we're going to have with us on the line very soon Brad Dacus from the Pacific Justice Institute. Brad is a lawyer. He has lawyers who work with him. And, of course, what they're doing is defending Christian organizations that are coming under attack and under persecution from the Anti-Christian Lawyers Union and other similar groups that really have an intense hatred of Christianity. And when you understand that there really is a conspiracy against Christianity, there are people who hate Christianity because they hate America and they hate freedom, then you can begin to understand so much of what's going on in the world today. Well, our hope, of course, is that we can begin to get people to understand how this whole situation works. There was I was reading this evening about a program. One of the areas in the East has been getting funding from the federal government. It's an abstinence program. It's called the Silver Ring thing, and they teach abstinence. And they have two programs. One that, of course, teaches abstinence from a Christian point of view, one that teaches abstinence from a secular point of view, and the children have the right to go to either one they want. Well, of course, the vast majority of the children choose the one that where, of course, it has a religious foundation, and the program has been working great. And, of course, it came under attack by the Anti-Christian Lawyers Union, affectionately known as the ACLU, and they were able to get federal funding cut off. Now, why didn't our Christian president intervene and just give an executive order and say, look, if they're offering either one, it's a matter of choice. It's not being, forced on these people at all. But you see, it has nothing to do with force. It has to do with destroying faith. And if you understand what really goes on in our schools today, it is destroying the faith of our children That's why they had to take prayer and God and the Ten Commandments and teaching about the real meaning of the Declaration of Independence out of school. If you understand that they're targeting our children, everything makes sense. If you don't understand that, nothing makes sense. And certainly every one of the state constitutions mentions God in the first paragraph of that state constitution. If you actually, go to the Congress, why they open their sessions with prayer, and the Senate opens its sessions with prayer. The Supreme Court justices are all sworn in with their hands on a Bible, and the President, I swear, is sworn in with his hands on the Bible. And the Supreme Court has held at least four or five times that America was a Christian nation. And even the Supreme Court opens every session when the choir comes in and says, God save the United States and this honorable court. Well, you have to understand, of course, that they know that there is no wall of separation between church and state, but they have an agenda. And when you understand that agenda, so much of what's going on in this country makes sense. They pander to the Christians while they destroy the faith of their children. And when you understand that, why it's so easy to understand why we see so many local municipalities doing everything they can to undermine the ability of the churches to function and function effectively. And we'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty, hopefully with Brad Dacus. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, why is this issue important? Well, you see, you can't have a free society unless you have moral people. And if you can destroy the morality of the people, then you can destroy the nation. It was John Adams who said, our form of government was made for a moral and religious people. It would not work for any other. And so there are people out there who don't want our system to work. And, boy, are they doing a good job of undermining the moral and religious fabric of this society? Why? Because they want to destroy the foundations of this country and have a dictatorship. That's what it's really all about. There truly is a conspiracy against God. And with that as a background, let's go to Brad Dacus from the Pacific Justice Institute. Brad, how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing great, Dr. Stanley. Appreciate being on the program.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about what, for the people out there in the listening audience who don't know you and don't know your ministry, why don't you just give us a brief overview of what is the Pacific Justice Institute and why have you dedicated your life to this purpose?
Oh, you bet. I'd love to. We at the Pacific Justice Institute, we are a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we're very unique in that we're a huge network of over 1,000 volunteer affiliate attorneys nationwide. Over half of those attorneys, over 500, are here in California, dedicated to defending religious freedom, parental rights, the family and faith, and the institution of marriage, and those things that are so cherished by so many Americans. And we do it all without charge. And since 90% of the cost of a case is attorney time, and with so many attorneys volunteering their time, that gives us basically a 10-to-1 leveraging with our litigation budget. So it gives us a big bang for the buck, and that's why we help probably more people, I believe, on the West Coast than any organization in the country. Give you a little sample here, Dr. Stanley. Last year we had a little over 700 requests for assistance. As of July 31st of this year, we already have had over 1,100 requests for assistance, and that's with five more months to go. So we're very busy, and then former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese is chairman of our advisory board, along with other people, and we're just really excited about it, making a real impact and helping volumes of people, to make sure they get the help that they need.
And, of course, your cases are really those where prosecution or the barriers are put up because of the Christian faith. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, very, very much so.
All right, fine. Well, when we get back, we're going to have to just bring our other stations back on board here. But when we get back, what I would like you to do would be to tell us some of the cases that are ongoing now, where, of course, this effort to undermine the faith or the ability to practice our religion or restrict is being implemented. Go ahead. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Brad Dacus from the Pacific Justice Institute, and they are an organization with over 1,000 volunteer attorneys all across America, about 500 of them here in the state of California. And they right now have a large backlog so far this year, 1,100 cases, and we're only halfway through, a little over halfway through the year. And the whole idea is that these are people or institutions or churches that are being really restricted because of their religious position. So what are some of the cases that you have? Could you give us some examples?
Oh, you bet. One of the most important cases that we're handling right now is on behalf of a church in the Central California Visalia area, where this church decided that they wanted to buy a building, and so they have a place to meet. And the owner of the property said, "Hey, great, no problem, we'll sell it to you." So they signed it, and they had it in escrow, and they were purchasing the building. And then the local government heard about it, and even though this property had been for sale for a long time, the local government heard about it and said, "Okay, we'll stop it." So they went ahead and took the property via eminent domain. Now, Dr. Stanley, you're well aware, I'm sure, as many of the listeners, of a Supreme Court's recent decision saying local governments can take anyone's property at any time for any reason and give it to anyone they want, private person.
All right, but did they have somebody they wanted to give it to, or was this really an effort to block the church?
Well, this is an effort to block the church.
I know that it was specifically for that purpose. There was no idea we needed it for a school, we needed it for a road, or we even needed it for a shopping center.
Right, the whole effort was to block the church. So it was just really outrageous in that. And so what we're doing is we have filed a lawsuit on behalf of this church, and the purpose of this lawsuit is to protect the rights of churches to be able to build and grow and expand, and hopefully also push back partially at least that Supreme Court decision that tramples on the rights of property rights of this. Of individuals and at least as applied to religious institutions. So it's a real important case because we think that churches, I think, are the most vulnerable to local governments not appreciating them and wishing to push them back or to shut them down.
Well, I think this exemplifies what we've often said, and that is that the people who hate Christianity are usually the ones who are willing to put in the time to get into local government, to run for office, and to get into key positions. There really is this intense hatred of Christianity. When you understand that, and when you understand these people have a mindset that will do anything to destroy Christianity, and they're willing to put in the long time and run for office and put up the money and gain the supporters, and then they can use that power, of course, to oppose Christianity. But you mentioned the Supreme Court decision. Brad, I thought that what the Supreme Court basically said was, this is a state issue, and the state should pass legislation that would prevent this, rather than saying it's all right to do it. They said basically that the state government should pass legislation because matters dealing with life, liberty, and property are state issues, not federal issues. Would that be a fair interpretation of what the Supreme Court decision said?
Yeah, and the problem with that, of course, is that the Fifth Amendment Takings Clause of the U.S. Constitution makes it very clear, in the dissent in that opinion brought this out, it's very crystal clear that government can only take property via eminent domain for public purposes, you know, like to build a highway or a freeway that needs to go through that area or something like that, or a school that needs to be built. It's not for private whims, or much less just for out of animosity to prevent like a church from being there. And so the court, I think, was way off kilter on this, and I know many Americans, the polls show the overwhelming the numbers, even in the 90 percentiles, that of Americans who are totally against this decision and objected to it.
But didn't the Fifth Amendment really restrict the power of the central government rather than the power of the state government?
Oh, right. Oh, absolutely. And that was and states, therefore, it is real important for states to adopt statutes. And particularly, even more important now, for them to adopt legislation, statutes, amendments to their state constitutions to make sure that that religious institutions and property rights in general are protected.
And I think that a number of states have actually taken that action. Has there been any effort here in California to limit that? In other words, to our state legislature to say local communities can't take property just because they want to give it to one of their developer friends?
Well, presently in California, there's one legal grounds for which they cannot prevent them, and that is they have to show that before they take property from one private person and give it to another, they have to show that there's economic blight, and that there's that this existence of this present usage of the property is really destroying an area. You know, that it's an abandoned shack and people are using it for drugs and it's just terrible and it's just bad and we've got to get rid of it, you know, and that kind of a scenario. But the courts have been very loose and have basically signed off on any kind of justification of economic blight that's alleged by the local government. So they're really, presently in California, there really isn't much statewide protection, state statutory protection. And that's why you have Senator McClintock, who's proposed some legislation that would reinstitute the protections against eminent domain and requiring local governments not to do so if the purpose is just to give it to another private person.
In fact, I'll never forget when this subject came up, and it was on the Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor, was on the Jay Leno's program, and Jay Leno brought up this Supreme Court decision on the eminent domain. And Arnold, you know, of course, ordinarily everything he says is scripted, but he obviously wasn't expecting the question, and his reply was. Well, he said, this is wrong. He said, this is wrong. He said, they're going to just give that to the developer friends who are paying them off. And, of course, he was absolutely right. It's what local government does. Anybody who doesn't think that, an awful lot of money changes hands behind the scenes or favors or political support or all of these things, and developers will get favorable treatment or get property, they want that piece of property, and rather than go ahead and pay market value for it, they're going to get it condemned and get it for a song.
Right, and this is so important that we at the Pacific Justice Institute went out of our way to testify upon the request of Senator McClintock in favor of his proposed legislation, his proposed amendment to the state constitution, and I think it's going to have to end up going on the ballot because the present majority in the Assembly and the State Senate are not in favor of such protection of property rights. So,
well, I'm sure you've got that on the ballot, would win overwhelmingly, because I think
yes.
Even here in California, the majority of people really do support private property, the right to private property, which is the very essence of our freedom. In fact, it was stated as such in the Declaration of Independence, where we were guaranteed life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But every place, of course, that they talk about life and liberty in the Constitution, they always include the word property, because that was the Lockean concept. In fact, that's what Thomas Jefferson originally wrote in the Declaration. And of course, they had a committee that came along and changed it to pursuit of happiness. But, certainly they understood that if you didn't have the right to own property, you really didn't have any life or liberty.
Oh, absolutely, and that's why we would love to see something passed and adopted. Even though the liberals came out with some legislation that would protect people from losing their residence, because anyone's house can be taken now by any government, and so they would protect residents, but they refused to put in a protection for churches and religious institutions from having their property or their buildings suddenly taken from them. So the left, unfortunately, still doesn't understand the importance of property rights as applied for religious institutions as well.
Well, I think that they do it, Brad. I think that they hate Christianity, and I think that there really is a conspiracy against Christianity, and it is this mindset, this liberal mindset from people who don't understand that you destroy Christianity, you destroy the freedom that has given them the right to have their bizarre views. Well, I thought there was federal legislation, though, that protected churches from discrimination. How would that be applied here?
Yes, and that's a real good point. It's called the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act of 2000. It's an incredibly powerful piece of legislation, and that is what we are basing our lawsuit upon. We're basically arguing that, the Supreme Court, has diluted the the takings clause of the Fifth Amendment and given this wide discretion. But our argument is, hey, it still doesn't trump the federal statute, the Religious Land Use Act, our LUPA. That's what we're arguing, and hopefully the courts will agree with us. They may not. They may contend, no, the eminent domain right trumps our LUPA. We just don't know at this point how that's going to turn out.
Well, of course, I pretty oppose the original concept of that, and if I'd been there to vote for it, I would have voted against it. But as long as it's the law of the land, you might as well take advantage of it. And
right.
I know that you've used this in the past, and you've been very, very successful utilizing that that federal statute, haven't you?
Yes, we have. And you know, here's the real interesting point is that if the Constitution, if the Supreme Court had interpreted the Constitution properly and recognized the protection of the free exercise clause of religious freedom to apply to religious institutions, then the statute never would have been enacted, and it shouldn't have had to been enacted by a federal government because the Constitution was very clear in its protections. But because the Supreme Court struck down religious freedom, that's the only reason this act of took place.
There's a law of unexpected consequences. When you do anything, you never know what it's really going to have. And, of course, so often they pass this legislation, and then the consequences are things that they never, never anticipated.
Right.
We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Brad Dacus, and I think that we're going to open up our lines. If you have a question, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, when we get back, I'm going to tell you how you can get hold of Brad. I've known him for a long time when he was working for the Rutherford Institute. He's deserving of your support and your prayers. We'll be back in just a moment with Brad Dacus of the Pacific Justice Institute. Well, Brad, let's talk a little bit more. What about some of the other cases that you have coming down the line?
Well, we have a number of cases. One is involving prisons. In California, there's a number of prisons that refuse to allow Bibles to be sent by ministries sent to prisoners. You can send in magazines and all kinds of books and things that aren't, you know, exactly moral directly to prisoners.
But you're talking about pornographic literature.
Right, but you can't send Bibles and religious material. That you have to go to a third-party vendor. You have to pay a premium sum to. And they only have certain religious materials available. So it's a real clear hostility and censorship against religious materials provided by religious institutions. And we're filing an action against that on behalf of one prison ministry.
Now, is this on the state prisons? Is this
yes.
County prisons or city prisons? What?
It's state prisons.
And so, in other words, this is a policy of the state government. Now, is this a fairly new policy?
I'm not sure how new it is, but it was brought to our attention a few months ago. We tried to work with the prisons that involved to get them to change their policy. Some prisons have changed their policy, but not all.
Well, now, is this then the decision that's made by the warden or what?
Yeah, it's made by the warden and all, but there's no state statutes or you know, state mandates against it.
No, well, we know that here in the state of California, they're allowing the imams, the Muslim imams, to go in and actually organize, at least in certain of the prisons. And there's talk about this terrorist group in Southern California came out of the prisons.
Right.
They were going to commit acts of violence. So obviously, the Muslims can go in there and organize.
Yeah, and Christians are allowed to go in too, but they're just make it very difficult for you to be able to give a Bible. Or religious literature material to at least the Bibles. Now, the other religious materials, I don't know about the Quran, but I know that the Bible they definitely single that out in other in Christian books.
Well, Christian, I mean, this is simply another example of this hostility towards Christianity. This effort, you know, to keep it out of the prisons. But if these people were Christians, they would be in prison, or most of them wouldn't.
Right, right, absolutely, and that's why this is so important. So that's a real important one. Another one is involving a nurse who's been told that she's cannot keep her job unless she assists with abortions. We think it's a clear violation of her Title VII rights to reasonable accommodation of her sincerely held religious beliefs. And so we have filed an action on that with the EEOC. And And it looks like that's probably going to go to court, actually.
Now, is this the hospital that is coming up with this edict?
Yes. And it's most disturbing. So, and then we have another case example of an employee who works for a subcontractor of a power plant in Southern California. And this employee has been told that he can't they can't read his Bible and share his faith during lunchtime, and there's a real clear discrimination there, and we filed an action in that case. That's another really good one.
And but that is actually reading the Bible on his own time.
Here's specifically what it was. It was having a. Thank you for. It just reminded me what it exactly was. He was having posted a little bumper sticker that says, "Marriage equals one man."
Hold that thought.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Brad Dacus from the Pacific Justice Institute, and we've been discussing what some of the cases they are. We've already talked about the case where they wanted to take a building that a church wanted to buy and the seller wanted to sell, and they were going to take it by eminent domain, not to use it for any other purpose, but just to keep it from being used by the church. And then Brad was just telling about a government employee who had posted a little sign that said marriage was for one man and one woman. Well, tell us the background. What sort of individual was this? What was his job? And where was he posting the sign?
Yeah, well, he's an individual who works for a subcontractor of a power company in Southern California. And he was in his private cubicle, and he posted it, not in a lunchroom, not, you know, in the front reception area. He posted in his own private cubicle this little sign, like a little bumper sticker. It says, "Marriage equals one man plus one woman." And that's it. And the significance of the whole matter is the fact that other employees had personal political and religious slogans and things up in their private cubicles. But his supervisor, who clearly was of a different...
mindset, shall we say?
Yes. yes, definitely a different mindset. Took offense to this and was told this employee, look, you know, that she was extremely offended. That this was an attack, and that she, you know, personally just, you know, was outraged. And so he went ahead and took it down. Well, it didn't stop there. She went and issued a written reprimand for him, and then demoted him from his position, simply because she personally was offended by this message in her personal capacity, and of course this is a classic example of intolerant tolerance, and you know we hear this word about tolerance all the time, but one way tolerance isn't tolerance at all. It's tyranny. One way tolerance equals tyranny. And that is what we're seeing, and this is a classic example of tyranny in the name of tolerance. And this man could have taken this and just said, well, okay, I'll just sit back. But no, he didn't. He contacted us at the Pacific Justice Institute, and we've already filed an action on his behalf, and we're going to court.
Well, I would certainly do that, and I would hope you'll get some financial remuneration for him, because his career with that company will be destroyed. I mean, this is what happens when you take a stand, but... You know, this is one of the only way you really have to fight this anti-Christian bigotry that is out there.
Absolutely. And so we've helped some other people too in the workplace. Another example is a woman who was attending a Long Beach State University, I believe it is, and she's a part of a program there where she gets to intern with the Child Protective Services, and as a part of her education and part of the graduate program, and so one day after she punched out from work, she went to the ladies' room at the Child Protective Services and put on her T-shirt, her casual clothes, and her T-shirt was a Christian T-shirt with a Christian, you know, message on it, and someone saw her leaving with this Christian T-shirt message on it, and they were so outraged they fired her from being there. She got an F as a grade as a part of the program, killing her opportunity, potentially, to continue and receive her master's and be certified for this program. The university backed off after they were approached and went ahead and did not give her an F. But nonetheless, she still faced terrible discrimination by the Child Protective Services. And this is not that uncommon with CPS. We've had a number of problems with that agency. And even Christian social workers complaining that there's a lot of hostility towards people of faith and depending on, you know, from different CPS offices. I'm not saying everyone, you know, all over the place, but different ones. We've had much more than other parts of government, let's put it that way. And so we went ahead and we have filed an action with the Pacific Justice Institute, have filed an action with the complaint with the EEOC, and are hopeful that we'll receive a right to sue letter in the not too distant future.
Well, now, what can you hope to accomplish for this woman, you know? Because obviously, you're not going to change the prejudice and the hatred, because these people are filled with hatred. You're not going to change their hatred towards anybody of faith.
Well, whenever there's discrimination, you can bring an action, and there are remedies, and this institution will learn a lesson, and hopefully other institutions will hear the price they pay and learn from it.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with that. I hope you keep abreast of it. We're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes with Brad Dacus from the Pacific Justice Institute. And I think people have to understand that Christianity is under attack today, right here in America. The end result of our Supreme Court's brilliant decision of attacking Christianity and undermining the faith of our people. We'll be right back here with Brad Dacus. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Brad Dacus, and we're talking about some of the cases he has. And Brad, when we bring our stations back on board in just about 3 minutes, why we want you to get your telephone number and, of course, your website out there. But give us a few more examples of the sort of things that you're involved in.
Oh, you bet. You know, we take very seriously the defense of the institution of marriage, and we're involved in two different lawsuits. Right now, presently engaging in the defense of the institution of marriage. One's in California and involving the defense of Proposition 22, and the other one's up in Washington. We think it's just very important to defend the institution of marriage. And of course, we're also very supportive of the Protect Marriage efforts, the amendment that's been proposed for the state constitution that would ensure the fact that marriage is defined between a man and woman, and the fact that no other union or partnership is legally recognized. I think that's very important, and I think there's a good chance we'll get the signatures. Focus on the families behind it, supporting it, Family Research Council, Capital Resource Institute, to California Family Council, and of course the Pacific Justice Institute.
All right, and of course, now the Prop 22 you spoke of, was that the initiative we had a few years ago which said that marriage was simply a union between a man and a woman? Is that what Prop 22 was?
Yes, that's what it is. That's what it, and unfortunately, an activist judge out of San Francisco, no other place, has decided to declare it was unconstitutional under the state constitution. So it's going to go on appeal, and I'm fairly confident it's going to be reversed.
But basically, it should have been a constitutional amendment. It was just passed as what sort of a sentiment, or what effect did it have under the law? It was an initiative, state initiative. But what did it accomplish other than making us all feel warm and fuzzy?
Well, it changed the definition to make sure that marriage itself, as an institution, is defined as between a man and a woman, and it was binding on the legislature. The legislature almost tried to go around it. Schwarzenegger vetoed it.
Has the governor vetoed that now?
He's going to veto it.
Okay.
But if he didn't veto it, or if someone else was elected to the governorship and decided to sign it next time around, we at the Pacific Justice who pledged to challenge that in a court of law, because propositions and initiatives passed by the voters of California trump any act of the legislature to override the stated will of the people. And the only way to trump it is either with another proposition or initiative, or with an amendment to the state constitution, and that's through the people as well. And so Yeah, but people who are interested in getting involved with a...
Hold that stuff right there, please. Sure. Just from... Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess the evening is Brad Dacus, and we were talking about Proposition 22, which passed here in California a few years ago, that said that basically a marriage was only for a man and a woman. There was no other such thing as marriage. Now, it was a state initiative that was binding on the legislature, so they couldn't trump it. But of course they have, and then they had some judge who said, well, it didn't matter that it was a state initiative, and it was the law that it was unconstitutional, so now they're going to have to come back and get a constitutional amendment that will actually make that fixed. Well, you have to have two-thirds of the vote to get a constitutional amendment through?
No, you don't have to have, that's a good thing. In California, you don't have to have two-thirds, and it's still difficult, because it's a very we're a liberal state, and the other side I know is going to have a lot of money, and so I think they're definitely going to be wanting to challenge it. But
well, now, Chris, for our listeners out across America, the state legislature here in California has recently voted to legalize. Are they going to call it the same-sex marriage, or what are they going to call it? What was the wording of what they did pass here in California? It really was same-sex marriage, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the title, but that was the bottom line. It legalizes marriage to between any person, any two persons, including homosexuals and those individuals under present law in California have the freedom to have a relationship. It's not like they don't have the ability to have a relationship. The issue is whether or not the government was in the best interest of the people and the welfare to recognize and, in essence, promote that relationship through recognizing it as marriage. And of course, there are so many public policy reasons why it's not in the public interest for government to go out of its way to promote something like that.
Well, if you wanted to kill off the homosexuals, it would be a good policy, but the homosexual isn't smart enough to realize he's simply a pawn in a vicious game. But now I think it's so interesting that Governor Schwarzenegger, who really has much higher aspirations than simply being the governor of the state that has the fifth largest economy in the world, I think Arnold Schwarzenegger is being potentially groomed to run for the presidency. He was picked by George Shultz and Warren Buffett and certainly the Lord Rothschild. If you haven't seen those pictures of Arnold and Warren Buffett and Lord Rothschild together, and they're all smiling like the cat that just ate the canary, I wonder what they were talking about. Anyway, that was before Arnold was run by them for the governor. But I think he, with higher aspirations, realizes that if he were to sign the legislation authorizing same-sex marriage here in California, his political career would be over. So, however he feels on this issue, he has said he's going to veto it.
Right.
And I'm glad he is, of course.
Yeah, we are too. And in fact, this issue also plays out in the public schools. There are some students who are told that they cannot wear pro-marriage t-shirts. In fact, there's a threat to suspend the students. This is up in Marin County. We at the Pacific Justice Institute put the school district on notice that they were violating the rights of these students. And there was also a Bible verse on the T-shirt as well. Of course, that was really offensive to the administration, I guess, to these Christian students. But the school district backed down, and students are once again protected to express themselves the same as those wishing to express themselves promoting other relationships.
Well, why don't you go ahead and get out your website, how people can reach your organization, and, of course, your telephone number.
Oh, our pleasure. Our website, if they'd like to sign up to get our press releases or to have me come and speak at their church or group without charge, I do a lot of guest speaking, they can go to our website. It's at pacificjustice.org, pacificjustice.org, or pji.org. We'll also get you there, pji.org. Or they can call us at our toll-free number, which is 888-305-9129. That's 888-305-9129.
All right, and Chris, Brad is going to be one of the speakers at our conference here on November 19th, here at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. That's our annual Radio Liberty seminar, and we do hope that many of you out there in the listening audience will set aside that date and come. We've got some great speakers coming from various parts of the country and would like to see a good turnout. That's the 19th of November. And if you're out there in the listening audience, why give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And if you're planning on coming to our annual seminar, why the number to call for reservation, because we will be serving lunch, is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And I'm sure all of those telephone numbers have done nothing but confuse you. So if you need them again, you can give us a call here at the station at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And Mike, who's on the board tonight, will get those numbers for you, or we can call you back with them. Well, Brad, you know, certainly, you know, you've handled a lot of cases. And would you agree that there really is this anti-Christian bias, that Christianity really is under attack in this once great Christian nation?
Oh, it really is. And to some degree, it's explainable in that people are, before, were just never really felt threatened by Christianity. They saw it as a benefit, a positive thing to society, community, to the raising of children and maintaining of order. But now there are many in the United States, and many here in the West Coast in particular, who have lifestyles and attitudes and that are totally opposite and opposed to what the Bible teaches, what Christians believe, and they consequently have a hatred towards people of faith. And of course, we don't hate back. But the flip side, though, we do need to make sure we maintain our freedom and rights to live our faith, and for Christians to be able to practice their faith and share their faith. And so it's amidst this sea of tolerance woven hatred that we're having to confront in so many different areas, like schools and the workplace and defense of the family.
And I think that you listeners out there have to understand that this is all part of a long-range plan to undermine the Christian foundation of this country. Because if you undermine the Christian foundation of this country, and you take away the fact that our rights come from God, we were the only country in the history of mankind that acknowledged that our rights came not from, from some ethereal concept for human beings, or came from the state, or from the king, or the emperor, or the feudal lord. Our rights come from God, and
right.
That is why God is under attack in America today.
Right.
These people have a different agenda. They worship a different God. Well, let's go to Roger's calling from Allentown. And, of course, we have our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Roger, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, thank you, gentlemen. I'd like to ask, and I'm in trying to ferret out the strict constructionist understanding. I think you may have aired a few weeks back, Stan. I'd like to ask your guest opinion. And a quick analogy, the same Article 5, which forbids double jeopardy, if somehow, would it fall to the federal government to redress that if the state or locale tried that first?
Now, what are you talking about, Roger?
Well, in a case of double jeopardy, you're trying a person over again.
You're talking about a trial, trying a person twice for the same crime.
And if that happened, would it fall then to the federal government to redress that situation?
All right, fine. Well, of course, the federal government does it all the time, as they did with the Rodney King case, where the state tried the people, they exonerated, then the federal government tried them again. So
yeah,
the federal government, of course, is very famous for that. They'll try people over and over again because they don't believe in the Constitution. But let's go to, how do you feel about that, Brad?
But that was separate charges, and that's mixing apples with oranges. I'm just saying, if a state or locale tried that, might it ultimately fall to the federal judiciary to correct that? And then I had a follow-on.
Okay, well, we have another caller here. Go ahead.
Just real quick, that's a real good question. My expertise is not criminal law, per se, but I will say that that does happen. If the state courts are not successful or botch it up, the federal courts come in under federal criminal law to do that. I have serious constitutional problems with that because it is You know, it's not deemed by the courts to be double jeopardy, you know, but because of the separation of, you know, the institution of the federal versus the state. But practically speaking, that's exactly what it is.
I think, though, the state, Roger, what you have to understand is that the federal government should have no rights having anything to do with criminal law in the states. There is no authorization for that under their constitution.
Right.
They have usurped it, and of course then they put a situation where you can be exonerated in one court, and then they'll go into the federal court,
right.
And of course they will simply, in violation of the law, where they have no right at all, they come in, and of course they were prosecuted. So we got real
problems. You guys missed the question.
Okay, thanks, and let's go to Steve from Verdale, Washington. Hi, Steve.
Good evening, Dr. Stan. How are you there?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
My question is brief. I'm just wondering how it is that the federal government obtains jurisdiction over any church since they're separate.
All right, and that's a good question. Yeah. How would you answer the reply to that, Brad?
Yeah, as far as the Arlupa statute and being able to protect them, yeah, let me just say that was a very good question that was just asked, because that was a question that the Supreme Court is actually going to be hearing and taking up, we believe. I think that from a strict constitutional perspective, frankly, there are many serious problems with the idea of the federal government coming in and playing this role, because the Constitution, those who are original intent and strict constructionalists, from that perspective, It doesn't afford that right and authority for the federal government, to be quite frank. It's become law, and we at Pacific Justice Institute use it to protect the rights that the Constitution itself should be able to be used to protect. But unfortunately, the Supreme Court gutted that to religious free exercise protection. So this is what we're using out of an ad hoc capacity. But frankly, it should not be able to be law, and it shouldn't need to be law. Yeah, if the Constitution was interpreted correctly.
And so, Steve, what we've got is we've got a bad law that maybe can do good things. I would just assume we didn't have the bad law. We live in a world gone mad, and when you understand that, then things begin to make sense.
That's well put. I agree.
Steve, do you have another question or comment?
No, I really don't. Apparently, they just simply usurp authority that they don't in fact have.
Absolutely. But they do that all the time.
Right. And this came after, at least, put all the blame where it belongs, in addition to the Congress. What they did was, in response to the Supreme Court gutting the free exercise clause protections afforded through case law and through the First Amendment. And so if the Supreme Court was original intent strict constructionalist, I believe that there's a good chance that they would not have it would not have been necessary. Of course, I hate to go back too far, but that's, of course, assuming the predicate of the 14th Amendment carrying over everything as applied to the states. If you really want to be a strict constructionalist, the 14th Amendment was very limited in what it carried over to the states, and it would be up to the states to have their own free exercise protections, and the Establishment Clause would only apply to acts of federal government.
Steve, I think you understand that there's been an organized effort going back well over 100 years. To actually, centralize all power in Washington, D.C.
Right.
And this is really what it's all about. These people, and some of these people wear black robes, have no loyalty to the Constitution they've sworn to uphold. They are part of a cabal that is interested in gutting the very fabric of our Constitution and then our freedom. And they know exactly what they're doing. And so we see Congress fumbling around, trying to, rather than take a stand against the Supreme Court, which they have the right to do under Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution, they pass these stupid and foolish laws with all sorts of unforeseen consequences.
Okay, thank you, Doctor.
Okay, fine. Okay, thanks, and let's go back to Roger. Do you want to rephrase your question?
Yeah. You guys are throwing in additional charges on the federal level. Could you forget that? And the second question is really the most important. But if a state itself tried a person a second time with the same exact charges, wouldn't the federal judiciary perhaps legitimately curtail that? Article 5.
Yeah, they could.
Okay, therefore, under that same principle, in the eminent domains, the New London, Connecticut case, was it not ultimately a federal judiciary responsibility under that same Article 5 to prohibit takings for other than public use?
That is a really good question, sir.
God bless
you. I'd have to think that through and research that one. That's a very good question.
Now, what the Supreme Court said, you're talking about the eminent domain.
Right.
And, of course, what the Supreme Court really said was it should be decided at the state level. That was
right.
And what was so incredible about the decision is that the conservative judges were on the wrong side, the liberal judges were on the right side, and we live in a world gone mad.
Yeah, it's never really a strict conservative or liberal issue, because sometimes they switch places in terms of respecting the Constitution, but usually the liberals are more disrespectful than the conservatives, but this time that was the case.
And the thing is, this is why our plea to our listening audience is learn the Constitution. Understand the concept of the separation of powers, not only within the three branches of the federal government, but the relationship between the federal government and the state government. And read the Federalist Papers, specifically 45, which says that, you know, the powers of the federal government are limited and defined. The powers of the state government are unlimited and ill-defined. And matters dealing with life and liberty and property are to be dealt with at the state level. That's what they were planning on.
Right. And, you know, one little side note, Dr. Stanley, I'd like to make about the recent passing of Chief Justice Rehnquist, and that is, it was under his authority and under his watch that the Takings Clause was even resurrected. It, prior to him, was completely not even respected with regards to the rights of property owners and protecting property owners. He literally resurrected it and recognized it in the Constitution. And I think, frankly, that was one of his greatest feats. Unfortunately, the irony is just as he is, before he passes away, we have the Supreme Court attempting to undo a lot of that constitutionalism that he brought into the Takings Clause.
Okay, well, I mean, a lot of these things may seem very mundane to our listeners, but they're vitally important if we're to maintain our freedom. The power of the federal government was to be limited by the Constitution.
Yes.
In fact, that's what Thomas Jefferson said. You know, in matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down from mischief by the change of the Constitution. And, of course, this was the ideas that were expressed by John Locke, who'd written that government governs best, that governs the least. Liberty and limited government were synonymous, and tyranny and total government were synonymous. And in which direction are we headed? We're going to be... Brad, get out your telephone number and website one more time, please.
That website is pacificjustice.org. Pacificjustice.org, and the phone number is 888-305-9129.
One more time.
888-305-9129.
And we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program. Well, Brad, we've got 3 minutes here before I have to let you go. So what thoughts are there, any of the cases you'd like to bring up, or any other thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners tonight?
I think in particular, I'll just simply say, you know, we're going to continue doing our work in the courts. We really appreciate greatly those who believe in what we're doing to defend the fundamental rights that our founding fathers instituted and actually didn't institute, but just simply recognized as being given by our Creator. And those who'd like to keep up with that, I really encourage them to contact us. We do all of our work completely without charge. That's how we work. So, if a church has a land use issue, they're not allowed to build or grow or expand. If there's a religious-based discrimination against them in the workplace, if their rights as a parent are being challenged either by public school or a social service agency, Child Protective Services, for example, and their children have yet to be taken, we have also free counsel there as well. And I just think that's just real important for people to know that they have rights, and also to know that that the Pacific Justice Institute is there to assist them and represent them without charge. Also, if there's a public school that, like, if it's doing something that really they think violates the rights of parents, it's offensive, they shouldn't hesitate to call us, because unfortunately that's becoming very, very common in public education, and parents need to have their eyes open, because things have changed dramatically since since they were children.
And I think people have to understand that people usually get promoted to the highest positions in the educational system because there's a force behind them. And
right.
There really are people who work very, very closely together, and they've got people planted within the highest echelons of our educational establishment, and they're there not, of course, to teach our children, but to change their attitude towards God and family and the country. And, you know, our children come out of school, most of them are dedicated liberals and atheists. This did not happen by accident. These children are not liberal because they have a heart. It is liberal because they have been indoctrinated, and their faith in everything worthwhile has been destroyed. That's why, of course, parents have to be involved, and if they can get them out of the private, out of the public schools, but if not, then, of course, go to Brad Day, because when you see what they're doing to undermine the faith of our children. Well, Brad, thank you so very much for being with us tonight, this evening, and keeping us abreast of the exciting things you're doing. And certainly we think that your work is well worthwhile. We're looking forward to having you here on the 19th of November at the annual Radio Liberty Conference.
I'm looking forward to it, and oftentimes when I speak at a conference, I sort of come and go. But this conference is one last year I really enjoyed. The speakers were very enriching and
we're out of time. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I was just saying goodnight to Brad. Go ahead, finish off there, Brad.
I was just saying it's a conference that's well worth the attending. I really enjoyed it myself personally.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to having you with us then on the 19th. God bless. Good night.
Thank you.
Okay. That was Brad Dacus, and certainly one of our good friends we've known for many years, and his ministry is certainly deserving our support. Well, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter and understand what's really going on in the world and who it is that runs the world. You need to get our newsletter, The Occult Hierarchy, either Part 1 or Part 2. Now, you have two choices. You can go on the Internet at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And pull down our newsletters, May or June of this year, The Occult Hierarchy. Or, if you don't have access to the Internet, or you'd like to get one of our newsletters, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you would be interested in coming to our all-day seminar on the 19th of November, that's a Saturday, and it's here in the Monterey Bay Area, the beautiful Monterey Bay Area, and it is beautiful that time of year. Why? Give us a call at the same number, 1-800-544-8927. If you want to understand why the Supreme Court does what it does, why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools, probably one of the best books that's been written on that subject is called The Brotherhood of Darkness. Of course, I read the book, and certainly you can find out more about that book on our website. But the book really goes into the fact that there was an active program. There were people who knew exactly what they were doing. They had the purpose. They had an objective in mind. And until you understand that what has happened does not happen by accident, there is an agenda behind it, you can't understand anything that's going on in the world today. So let me suggest you go to our main newsletters, and you can read through the newsletters as we talk about the secret societies that work behind the scenes. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are secret societies. And we find many people in key positions in government who are affiliated with these secret societies. There's not one secret society. There are a multitude of them, a dozen or more that I can think of without even hesitating, and probably many that we don't even talk about very often. But they all have a common goal. They all have a common objective. They are dedicated to the establishment of a new world order and a new world religion. And once you understand that, you can begin to understand what's going on, because the people who embrace this philosophy have an intense hatred of Christianity. There is a conspiracy against God. And if you don't believe it, read Jeremiah 11:9 talks about the conspiracy against God. Ezekiel 22:25, the second Psalm. There's always been a conspiracy against God, and it's being played out right before our very eyes today. And so remember our number, 1 800 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Remember our website, www.radioliberty.com. And please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, but pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you. It was Winston Churchill who wrote, "Still, if you will not fight for the right when you can easily win without bloodshed, if you will not fight when your victory will be sure and not too costly, you may come to the moment when you'll have to fight with all odds against you and only a perilous chance for survival. Or you may come to a worse case. You may have to fight when there is no hope for victory, for it would be better to perish than to live as slaves." Well, today we are fighting, we're fighting with very little hope of victory. We're fighting against forces that are so powerful and wealthy and really control the media and control the great wealth of our nation. But, of course, we have right on our side because we recognize this is a spiritual battle. And let's hope we never come to a moment when we'll have to fight with no hope for victory. Stand back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please do not call. Please do not call unless we ask for callers, because right now we have with us on the line from Southern California, Carol Matriciana. And Carol has put together some wonderful, wonderful videos. In fact, 20 or more, maybe 25 or more years ago, 30 years ago, why, she wrote a book called Gods of the New Age. It was a bestseller. It sold hundreds of thousands of copies, and she had put together a movie shortly after that, Gods of the New Age. Amazing film footage to understand the Hindu religion that has been recapped, packaged, and come to America as the New Age. And, well, I'm going to let Carol tell us about her, really what happened, her experiences, and these two great new videos she has. Carol, why don't you tell us a little bit about how it was that you happened to write the book, The Gods of the New Age.
Oh, good evening, Dr. Stan. Thank you so much for allowing me to talk about this. It was actually 20 years ago that the book came out, Gods of the New Age, and I was compelled to write it because I was born and raised in India, and I saw Hinduism, paganism all around me. I grew up with Muslims and Hindu friends and Christians as well in India, sort of Indian, if you will, Christianized sort of a mix of mysticism and Catholicism, very interesting within the Hindu culture. But these were the things that I grew up with and saw what Hinduism did to the people around me, grew up with it, as I say, as though it was a very normal. And then some 20 years later, when we left India and came to the West, I saw Hinduism repackaged for the Western mindset. And the religion that I had grown up somewhat fearing, if you will, as a child, some of the things that I saw, for instance, going to school, and if as I had done once, walked over a dead body or people laying on the sidewalk, ill people, you didn't go and help anybody because this was a result of what they had done in past lives. Any of their sufferings and punishments was karma. What in a sense, without them even knowing what they'd done in their past lives, they were suffering for it in this life. And you never tinkered with anybody's karma, so to speak, because that's what was due to them for what they had done. And these were the sort of things that I grew up with. I remember going to school as a child and seeing cows walking along the street, and the cows were considered holy and a deity, and sweet dear people would put their last pennies into a bowl of rice to feed a cow, or a garland to put around its neck, so that they could have the privilege of drinking the cow's urine, which was somehow considered divine.
They sort of live in a world gone mad, but this, of course, is the way things are in India until very recently. This one reason why they were such an impoverished country. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Carol Matriciadam, and we'll be talking about, we're going to be talking about her new video, Gods of Entertainment. This is a DVD. The other has been around for a time, and then, of course, certainly another one called the New Barbarians. We'll be right back in just a moment. All right, Carol, why don't you pick up the story there?
Well, I was explaining that living in India as a young child, growing up in India and seeing things that later on when I came to the West, I realized were not normal things, but certainly as a child I considered it very normal watching people consider cows that were loitering around the streets to be holy and chaotic madness to be divine. I remember when a somewhat insane person attacked me on the street, and rather than empathy from those around me, they came to touch me thinking that I had somehow absorbed and these divine powers had been imbued in me somehow, and that they could be touched out of me by people around. It was very extraordinary. But somehow when I came back to the West at almost 20 years old, all this Eastern, the looking to the East for enlightenment had become the vogue and the fad. The Beatles were around singing about yoga, and there was, of course, Hair, the musical that lifted up, elevated the fantasy of yoga being absolutely incredible, and through the streets were the Hare Krishna, and Maharishi Mahesh Yogi had come into Hollywood, taking Hollywood celebrities back to India, and there seemed to be this absolute fanatical media hype about a religion that, when I was in India, I didn't realize it was what it had been repackaged to appear to be. And extraordinarily, Dr. Stan, it only took about 3 years of indoctrination through the media that I became a westernized Hindu and absorbed all the teachings that I had rejected as a child, that I'd been fearful of as a child. I had now become a westernized Hindu and was practicing yoga as though it was a mental health and mental exercise for good health, whereas in India, yoga is understood to be a preparation for death, for reincarnation, where you only practice it in your very elderly years, after you've had children, after you've had a job, after you've, in essence, become a grandparent. then to prepare for reincarnation, your death and coming back again as something else, you then learn how to die while you're living by practicing the discipline of yoga. And that's what it's known to be in India. But its repackaging is to alleviate stress and to be an exercise for life in the West.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Carol. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I guess this evening is Carol Matriciana, and she's talking about having come to the United States, having been born and raised in India for 20 years, comes to the United States, gets involved with the New Age movement, and suddenly she's practicing yoga, which of course is something that's practiced in India, but it's practiced certainly when you get to be older in preparation for death. And certainly one of the things in yoga, don't you sort of open your mind up really almost to demonic possession?
Well, it wasn't until I had come back to an understanding of biblical Christianity and reading the implications, the spiritual implications from a biblical point of view that one, you know, that I understood that. But really what you're meant to do in yoga is you're meant to put your mind into neutral, in essence, to die to emotions, die to feelings, die, become apathetic. And then allow the what is known to be the internal potential, human potential power, to rise. Now this power is seen as a snake coiled at the bottom of the spine, and through a sort of self-hypnosis, you encourage the snake power to come up your spine and eventually culminate in a huge sort of spiritual orgasm, so to speak, in your third eye.
And now that is, of course, that's the Kundalini power, is it?
Yes, that is the Kundalini, the raising of the energy up the chakras, the spine. There's meant to be power points on the spine, and you're meant to raise this power so that you become, in a sense, aware of your own God spark, your own divine energy within you, to be able to do whatever you want to picture yourself to be able to do.
Do people understand the significance of the serpent, that you're trying to harness the serpent, and of course that is Satan himself?
Well, it's not until you put it into a biblical perspective that you understand how wicked the serpent is. But in India, the gods are associated with the serpent. For instance, I remember as a child looking at Shiva, continually the consort of Kali, the black goddess of destruction, and Shiva has got a serpent wound around his head and neck and shoulders, and the serpent is seen as the ultimate of powers. And of course, from a biblical point of view, yes, the God himself said that Satan had huge powers, but these powers were associated with darkness and that we needed to stay away from them, and that Christ came to set us free from that power of darkness and bring us into the light. But while you're practicing yoga, as I was, and I got into it more and more and started having nightmares and nausea and confusion, but you don't realize that all of this is opening yourself up to kind of spiritual and demonic possession, because when you're in that worldview, you're deceived. You think up is down and down is up and right is wrong and good is bad, and it's very confusing. And what I find so incredible, Dr. Stan, is a few years ago I made a video on Harry Potter, Witchcraft Repackaged. The motto of Harry Potter school is to rouse the sleeping monster, the serpent, and Harry Potter's power source comes from the serpent. And so does his enemies, Lord Voldemort. So here we have a young witch, 11-year-old witch in the Harry Potter series, who is teaching hundreds of thousands of children around the world to key into this satanic, this serpent power. Harry speaks to the snake. He knows snake language. He gets his power from the snake. And but Harry is called white. He is a good witch. And what Harry is learning is what hundreds of thousands of children are vicariously learning through the Harry Potter books. But the Latin motto of Harry's Hogwarts School of Witchcraft is talking about awakening a sleeping monster, and the sleeping monster is, of course, the dragon power or the snake.
And really, Chris, what's frightening today, Carol, is even some of our churches are embracing Harry Potter because it's entertaining for the children, and they're reading, and they can almost see some moral message in this introduction to witchcraft. Do we live in a world gone mad?
Yes, witchcraft is the fastest growing religion amongst teenagers and children, and of course it's being taught in our school system through Harry Potter, where the Bible has been thrown out of schools and teachers are not allowed to read the Bible in the classroom aloud, or indeed, let's say, Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series, because that's supposedly a religious book based on the Bible, but they're allowed to read J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter series, because after all, witchcraft isn't real, it's only fantasy, and the children are being amused. But the incredible thing about that is that witchcraft has been made a legitimate religion by the U.S. Supreme Court. It has got IRS tax-exempt status. There are Wiccan chaplains in the military. Witchcraft is a live and well religion in the American, in the United States of America, with thousands of followers.
Well, you know what's really so interesting? I may have mentioned this before, but I did a program on nationwide television. It was only about a 6-minute program, but it was on some network called Unscrewed, all the incredible titles. But I talked about, of course, the emblem on the back of the dollar bill, and about the world satanic movement, and about witchcraft. And I got an email from an irate witch. And she said, I mean, how dare you, you know? I talk about witchcraft and Satanism. Why, we're not satanic, and we're not Luciferian. In fact, I'm a white witch. Of course, there's some bad witches there, the black witches. But she said, we actually mix our potions and cast our spells so that we can contact the beings from the other dimension. So that we can contact the beings from the other dimension. And, you know, as I'm watching television now, and on Monday evening they have The Medium, a fascinating program, very appealing program, based upon a true story of a woman who worked with the police to help them catch the bad guys, and she is contacting the beings from the other dimension. The Ghost Whisperers, I suspect this is going to be going along with the same thing. And we're taking this as the most normal thing in the world, that we can contact the beings from the other dimension, or certain people can. And the trouble is, I really believe they can, but that people don't understand. This is the demonic dimension. This is where Satan and his demons actually are working and attacking the very foundations of Christianity. And yet, everybody thinks it's so funny and great and appealing, and it really is appealing, because they're playing on our emotions. And there's nobody out there pointing out that we're introducing our adults and our children into witchcraft and demonic obsession and possession. Because, you know, you only go so far into this, and pretty soon you yourself begin to get possessed.
Well, I think the most frightening thing about what you're saying, Dr. Stan, which is absolutely true, while adults are doing it is one thing, but when adults start teaching young children as young as the age of 6 years old that can learn about an adult religion through the school system. So here we have Harry Potter, a friendly witch, a supposed white witch, who knows how to converse with a snake, who gets his information from the other side. His dead parents converse with him. In the boarding school that he's in, the dead are all around him as ghosts and visiting humorous characters from the other side, who've died and are part of the corridors, the academic corridors of Harry Potter's occult school. And so what's happening is that not only is Harry and his 350 students at the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry going through the adventures, but so are hundreds and thousands of children as young as 6 years old who are being read to these books in the classroom by adult teachers, and they are vicariously learning the same lessons that Harry Potter is learning in his school, but they're also being taught them in government schools with our taxpayer money, where Christian or the Christian faith has been tossed out. The Ten Commandments aren't allowed to be read. The Bible isn't allowed to be read. But 101 witchcraft is humorously packaged and taught to our children. And if they can't read at 6 years old, then they can listen to tape cassettes. And then you have the children also being taken on taxpayer money in school buses to Warner Brothers premieres of the Harry Potter films. And Warner Brothers is associated with the publisher of Harry Potter. They're both part of the same big conglomerate. So when the publishers of Harry Potter are Scholastic Inc., who are also the curriculum providers of our schools, school material, and then Warner Brothers, who says that Harry Potter's movie is an actual portrayal of witchcraft, is busing our children to the theaters at the premieres. So here we have the most incredible indoctrination and brainwashing of these young children coming up to accept witchcraft as normal, as approachable, as attainable. And when they're out of school, they can go to let's say Barnes and Noble or any other great stores, and in the presentations of the Harry Potter books where they are, there's also all these new age and young books, teen kits for witch kits for teenagers along the shelves of children's reading around Harry Potter books.
Well, we can't celebrate Christmas or Easter in school, but we can celebrate Halloween. We couldn't take our children to a church during the holiday season, but we could certainly bus our children to the graveyard and for death education. What's wrong with this picture? And then we wonder why so many of our young people have real problems emotionally, and of course why they have lost their faith in God. And this is not happening by accident, it's happening by intention. It's about time the good people took a stand, because we either stand up and say no now, or one day we'll be on our knees saying, yes, yes, yes. Well, I guess this evening, Carol, Miss Luciana, we're talking about, of course, some of the material that Carol has put together, and we really started out talking about a wonderful video that she has going into Gods of Entertainment, and of course we mentioned also the Harry Potter repackaged, or witchcraft repackaged, which is the story of Harry Potter. Well, let's get to the Gods of Entertainment video, because I think that's a fascinating video, and you put that onto DVD now. Why don't we tell our listeners about that, because it's a beautiful, beautifully done video.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, it's just come out in DVD, and I have bonus footage from a Harry Potter TV special that I did attached to this Gods of Entertainment DVD. And I basically made that out of huge concern that that the media has become, the entertainment industry has become such a controlling factor in our, with our young children. And basically, whoever controls the media controls the culture that elects the politicians who appoint the judges who shape our political, social, legal rules and laws and spiritual worldview. And the most incredible information is in this DVD, where it explains the agenda behind the power grab of only five U.S. mega media conglomerates that control 95% of mass media and entertainment worldwide. And the targets of those in power are our American 32 million teenagers.
Five mega corporations control the American media?
Only five.
They dominate it, anyway.
Five U.S. mega media conglomerates control 95% of worldwide mass media and entertainment. That is even more incredible, that these people are after America's 32 million teenagers' money, and these children have the potential of $150 billion spending dollars, and they're being seduced and enticed and brainwashed by biased media messages which just twist our children's views, worldviews. And many people believe that the strong anti-Judeo-Christian bias of those in the media and their influence in the content of a lot of TV programs and movies is to blame for the declining values of society.
Well, I think it really is. In fact, I was reading this evening something I get regularly from the government, the CDC, a daily report comes out of the Centers for Disease Control. They were talking about a school in I think it was in Ohio, with about 420 children in the school and in the graduating class, and 65 of the girls were pregnant. And, you know, and they were saying, gee, why did this happen, you know? And they had an abstinence program, but they let it go by the wayside. They didn't have a problem when they were teaching abstinence. But, of course, they quit doing that because somebody retired. They didn't get anybody to replace them. One of the few things that that Rush Limbaugh says that I think is absolutely right. He said, in matters of sex, abstinence works 100% of the time. And yet there's a conscious effort to discourage abstinence education in our schools, and to promote sexuality and promiscuity, and you know, and do what you want to do. You make the decision, and what 15-year-old is going to make the right decision? There is a conscious effort to corrupt our children. I believe they're doing a great job, and we'll be back with Carol Matriciana in just a moment here. What is happening is not happening by accident, ladies and gentlemen, but by intent. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Carol Matriciana, and the point she makes is that five mega corporations dominate 95% not only the American but of the world media. And those five major corporations, what are they, Carol?
Well, there's AOL, Time Warner, and the interesting thing about AOL, who also under that conglomerate are the publishers of Harry Potter. So there was a $165 billion mega merger between AOL and Time Warner, and that was in about 2001. So this is the largest media merger in history, and the new company promises to offer a total powerhouse of integrated communication, media, entertainment across all platforms, computers, phones, just everything. So we have AOL Time Warner as the largest corporation. Then there's Walt Disney. That's the third largest global media conglomerate. There's Viacom. That's the second largest global media conglomerate after AOL and Walt Disney. Then we've got Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, which has media holdings in the U.S., in Canada, in Europe, Australia, Latin America, and Asia. And then there's Vivendi Universal. This giant subsidiary is the Universal Music Group, and that's the number one music company in the world with roughly 22% of the global market. So here we have five American mega corporations controlling music, news, computers, phones, software. Plus entertainment, the big Disney movie studios, the entertainment giants, ABC TV network, cable networks, theme parks, and then all the merchandising that crisscrosses all of this. Each of these conglomerates only have their own production companies, their own marketing. It's absolutely incredible power, and they are playing to the teenager. They want the teenager's money, and by the time that teenagers are about 17 years old, they have spent 40,000 hours watching movies, videos, TV programs, playing video games, listening to music, reading the popular books and news stories, which thus makes the mass media of entertainment among the most influential teachers of our children and the prime source of values, spiritual instruction, and behavior modification. That is incredibly powerful.
Well, Carol, I think that there is more than simply wanting their money. I think that they want to influence their worldview. I think they want to paganize our children. In fact, in this video, it's called The Gods of Entertainment, you actually interview somebody from Hollywood who gives a very poignant explanation of what Hollywood is really about. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes, that was the director of the film behind Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ. Excuse me. And this director said that even though Hollywood knew how much money they could get from Mel Gibson's movie, they would not distribute it because of the message, regardless of how much money it made. And we know how much money Mel Gibson's movie made. It was the biggest breaker of all records. But they would not distribute it through their systems, through their distribution network, because of its message. And this was the director that said it openly, that this is why they sabotaged it, because it presented a Judeo-Christian message, and Hollywood is anti this type of spiritual worldview.
And of course, one of the things that I remember he said is, they're not in this primarily for money. They want to destroy Christianity. They're anti-Christian. And when you understand that, it all begins to make sense. There really is a conspiracy against Christianity that involves some of the most wealthy people in the world today. And until we understand that, we scratch our heads and say, why are these things happening? Why are they putting out these terrible, vulgar, depraved films when they're not making any money on them? Why? Because they want to put out terrible, violent, depraved films because they want to corrupt our kids. And they're doing a good job of it. Look and see what's happening to so many of our children. I'm amazed that as many children turn out as well as they do. We got a real problem in America. Because, of course, there's that age-old conspiracy that began in the Garden of Eden and has been here ever since then. A conspiracy for who will rule the souls of men. Will it be the prince of this world? Will it be the God of heaven? And believe me, right now, the prince of this world seems to be doing pretty well, but we know who's going to win in the end. We'll be right back here with Carol Matriciana. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Carol Matriciana, and we're really talking about her video, The Gods of Entertainment. Is there anything else you'd like to cover in discussing this this DVD, which is now out on DVD, with a section on that on Harry Potter?
I feel very, very much like you, that if we look to the bigger picture to see why... what is behind the most incredible brainwashing and conspiracy that's taking place? So in most of my films, I sort of weave in that the bigger picture, but then specifically come down to how it works either through the entertainment industry or through the incredible Harry Potter phenomenon. My latest DVD the video I put out on DVD is The New Barbarians, which is training children to kill. And this was an incredible story where I got hundreds of hours of footage from Arab TV showing how young children are being trained by their elders to commit suicide, and this child self-sacrifice is right there for people to see in The New Barbarians. And it's absolutely incredible that the attitude that Muslims have towards their children is so completely different from our attitude, where we in a sense want to protect our children and keep them from harm's way. That seems the most rudimentary of instincts to us. But in Islam, the highest aspiration is to teach their little children how to kill others and to die as a result, and that such a death as a martyr brings assurance of paradise, and that they're rewarded in heaven with 70 virgins, I mean, as though little children even understand this, but all of this is guaranteed by the Islamic belief in Allah. And to become a martyr is to win the highest approval of family members. And here in this video, The New Barbarians Training Children to Kill, one sees how a mother says that when at the death of her son as a martyr, this was the happiest day of her life. And a father says that what more could a father ask than to have his son sacrificed to kill the infidels?
Now, see, this may have always been in the background of the Muslim faith, but it's only been in recent years. I mean, we're talking about the last 20, 25 years.
Oh, this has come forward.
I mean, we'll be back in just a moment with Carol Matriciana. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just talking about this amazing video, and now it's on DVD. It's called The New Barbarians, and it's based upon a film footage that is put out by the Arab television, Muslim television, over in Palestine, indoctrinating the children. We're talking about 5, 6, 7-year-old children, Muslim children, in wanting to kill. And I was saying that although there's always been a few people within the Muslim faith who held these views, few people within the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, which began in 1928, and certainly the Wahhabi religion in Saudi Arabia, which dates back to the 1700s, these feelings were not prevalent until about 25 years ago, shortly after the United States toppled the Shah of Iran and brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power, and then began to finance the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, and was circulating Qurans and providing textbooks for the Afghan children, promoting this radical form of Islam, that now it's sort of like, well, you just toss a little match into a dry field, and suddenly you see the grass catching on fire, and then the forest behind it catching on fire, and then tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of acres burning. And this is exactly what has happened. I mean, by beginning to encourage this radical force of a form of religion, now it's beginning to take hold, and they're using television to teach children 6, 7 years old to become suicide bombers. This is the most amazing footage I've ever seen, Carol. Why don't you sort of develop this idea?
Well, it is. I think what's so incredible about the footage is it's not an opinion. It's not yours or my opinion. It's actual. You just see hundreds of thousands of children being taught how to march, how to load guns, how to cut the throats, slit the throats of infidels. There are 10,000 kids that are put through these camps, and you actually see them there, and the children saying how thrilled they are to be trained as a martyr, and the sort of Sesame Street-like programming where you see these kids being taught that they should kill the Jew and drink their blood and eat their flesh. And you see this little boy with his fist in his mouth screaming. You see young teenage girls, and even younger than teenagers, yelling, saying, give us guns so that we can kill the Jews. I mean, it's a frenzy. And it was this this footage that actually, when I put this training children to kill, that eventually led me to make the next one on Gods of Entertainment, showing what an incredible influence entertainment has on children. But I think, you know, when you look at this Muslim weapon of choice, that Islam has taken their own children to be their weapon of choice. And I think what Prime Minister Golda Meir, the former Prime Minister, said, she said that there will never be peace in Israel until the Palestinians learn to love their children as much as they hate the Israelis. And I think that's a very profound statement, because when you look at this footage, you can't understand why would these adults, mature older people, as their weapon of choice, choose their own children to become suicide bombs and sacrifice, you know, have child self-sacrifice. to kill Americans and to kill Jews, and anybody that supports Israel or Jews need to be killed. It's absolutely incredible.
And whether they drive a car loaded with explosives, or whether they strap the explosives in themselves and walk onto a bus so they can kill everybody on the bus, what we're dealing with is organized insanity. People have lost all sense of the value of human life. It is simply kill the enemy. And, of course, they're told who the enemy is. Well, I think that really this film footage that you have is one of the most gripping things that I've seen. This is not imaginary. This is really what is being shown day after day, week after week, month after month in Palestine. And is this shown in other parts of the Muslim world?
Well, I'm sure it is, because, this particular programming, Palestinian Authority programming, is prevalent in the Arab world. And here you see these young suicide bombers. They're being trained like this, and of course then they grow up, and look what happened just a week ago, 4 years ago, September the 11th, where these young children that were driven with such hatred of the West, trained to become weapons of war, as they became older students, just flew into the World Trade Center, and look at the devastation we saw as thousands were killed. But in this film, The New Barbarians, there's an interview there with Bin Laden, and he is very proud of what is being done, just as Yasser Arafat also fosters this child self-sacrifice. There's an incredible sort of music movie as a clip in The New Barbarians, where you see news footage of Yasser Arafat amongst the kids, encouraging them to be bombers, human bombers. It's an amazing film, and I've just put it onto DVD, and I've got two bonus specials added to it. One is a special Jihad for Kids that just specifically, again, is a little Palestinian program. And then the other one is an interview that I did quite some time ago, about 20 years ago, on the New Age movement, when the Gods of the New Age book and video were number one bestsellers. And I thought it was a very, very interesting TV special, because it showed this most incredible footage that we got from India, when we interviewed gurus who said that guru was greater than God, and then showing hundreds and hundreds of Western followers of guru, the guru, the sex guru that had 100 Rolls Royces, Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, when he came to Oregon and had these, the camera just went over a sea of sannyasins or devotees that were doing this kundalini yoga, screaming and yelling and having blood come out of their noses and writhing, and you could see the possession. I mean, they were taken over by other beings.
By these demonic spirits. And this was not in India. This was in Oregon, California, where the Bhagwan was there. And, and of course, he had really hundreds and hundreds of followers there. In fact, they were going to take over this community. They actually put poison into the food. They were going to kill the people. They were going into salad bars in town and putting a bacteria basically into there to create a biological illness. What sort of madness is this? The average American had no idea what happened in Oregon. In fact, these were American kids that were totally possessed by this. Whatever happened to these young people? Do we have any idea, Carol?
No. I mean, yes. Well, what has happened to the sannyasins? I met many. In fact, when we made the film Gods of the New Age, we interviewed some of the people that had been devastated by these different guru organizations, the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, Transcendental Meditation, Guru Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, then of course the Hare Krishna looking at the faces of the little children there that became community property, much like Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh's group, that when the parents had children, the children became the property of the guru, community property. Well, these are the children that are growing up now in their, what, probably mid-20s or younger, perhaps older, that have become desensitized, that have probably absorbed a lot of New Ageism and paganism into their worldview. Yes, whatever happened to them, it's all very, very sad. And we're talking about hundreds and thousands that got pulled into these groups in the 60s, 70s, 80s, became the perpetuators of the self-help movement, the growth movements, the human potential movements. And of course, all of this has now been Christianized. What amazes me is some 20 years later, I see the very same ideas of contemplative prayer and breathing exercises being done in the Christian church, but now called the purpose-driven movement, or the emerging church movement, or
This is this experiential Christianity, not basing our faith on the Word of God, but wanting to experience, looking for a physical experience to confirm the reality of God. We don't need a physical experience, because so many of those physical experiences come from the other dimension, in my estimation. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I think the moment that we start going into our feelings, our feelings can be changed. I mean, the same mouth that perhaps praises God is the same mouth that can spew out filthy, angry words as well, where our feelings are not to be relied upon and leaned on. It's really the Word of God that is the absolute truth, and the promises of God, which are assurance and faithful. But in a lot of these new emerging church, seeker-friendly churches, even the Word of God has been diluted. For instance, Rick Warren, in his purpose-driven movement, encourages people to have the freshness of many contemporary versions. He includes
versions of the Bible, you mean?
Yes, versions of the Bible. He includes 13 in his purpose-driven books. And he encourages people to memorize these contemporary opinions of men. They're not based on the Greek and Hebrew biblical text, but just the opinions. For instance, the message is based on Eugene Peterson's opinions. And then the reader is asked to memorize these. Well, the memorizations of the texts that have been taken from all these different versions support Rick Warren's thesis, which isn't always a biblical concept. I mean, the whole idea of being motivated by something purpose-driven, a purpose-driven sort of relies on the works of man and not spirit-led, which is a completely different walk of faith.
Well, I think that the world is changing around us. The one thing that does not change is the Word of God, and unfortunately, we're not usually relying on the Word of God, and certainly as traditional churches do, but the more modern the churches, this great movement that's sweeping Christendom today is getting away from that. We're spending more time reading the book, The Purpose-Driven Church, than we are studying the Word of God. In fact, I've heard Rick Warren say, the last thing we need is another Bible study. I think the first thing we need is another Bible study. I wish I had more time for studying the Word of God, and it would help so much to do a better job in what I do. But then I'm a retired orthopedic surgeon, and I'm not a minister, but I have to rely upon people like you, Carol, who really, of course, deeply, into the Scriptures, who can begin to interpret this. And Carol, if any of our listeners out there who've never heard Carol talk about, he actually went through the 40 days of purpose, and she read the Scriptures every day, and she went to the meetings, and at the end of the 40 days of purpose, what was your impression?
I was very saddened, because I think that the dozens and dozens and dozens of people in these huge mega churches that went through the program with me and, of course, before me and after me, are all very dear, sweet Christians that want to be better Christians. They want to know the Lord better. They want to get closer. But sadly, I think this, it didn't help people get closer to the Word. It helped you have stronger relationships with one another. There seemed to be horizontal relationships going on rather than a vertical relationship.
Yeah, there was
with God.
A relationship with the other people in the class, other
yes.
people in the program, but not drawing you closer to
no,
God.
No, and it was very experiential. There wasn't a depth of discipleship going on. And I think the tragedy was, if I had to say what was the greatest tragedy, I felt a real sense of discernment was completely void because nobody really lent on the Bible, the Word of God from the Greek and Hebrew text, but all these contemporary versions. And so, in a sense, when you're fighting in the great war that we've got raging around us, and the Bible says that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but powers and principalities and hosts in heavenly places and wickedness and darkness in heavenly places. So we get an idea of that there is a whole different dimension out there raging, a huge war. Well, the only defense that we have is the living Word of God, which is sharper than any two-edged sword. But if you don't allow people to have this sharp, living sword that can cut through spiritual rhetoric, then all we've got is plastic knives, which really aren't going to do the battle. And the tragedy is that the people couldn't even discern it well enough to know what they were being numbed into, if you will, in this huge new merging church.
And this tremendous movement that's sweeping Christendom not only here but throughout the world. And,
yeah.
And you read 2 Thessalonians 2 and you find out that we're told there will be a great falling away, a great apostasy before the man of sin is exposed. Carol, we're almost out of time. Would you like to get your website out and your telephone number?
Well, thank you very much. Yes, my website is www.caryl. My name is spelled C-A-R-Y-L. And that's what it is, CARYLTV, short for television, .com.
That's CARYLTV.com, right?
Yeah. And otherwise I've got an 800 number, right, which is 1-800-897-5080.
Give that one more time, because people never get it the first time.
1-800, thank you, Dr. Stan, 897-5080. 5080.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a minute to wrap up our program this evening. I certainly think this is so vitally important that our listeners need to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. And the trouble is, most people don't even know the battle is going on. They don't understand that there really is a conspiracy against God. It's organized, it's structured. The people involved know exactly what they're doing. And they work not only with entertainment, sometimes they work within the church itself. We'll be right back here in just a moment, here at Radio Liberty. Well, Carol, we got about 3 minutes before we have to let you go. What parting thought would you like to leave with our listeners?
Well, one of the things that motivated me to make the Supernatural Powers DVD was just because there's such confusion in Christians' minds about angels and good angels and bad angels and fallen angels and ministering angels and guardian angels. And so what I did with Supernatural Powers was delved into the scripture to get the character of angels. Who are the ones that are God's ministers that only work for God? Who are the ones that apparently come to our beck and call and our bidding? They are the fallen angels that are out to deceive and corrupt us. And that particular DVD, Supernatural Powers, The Battle Between Good and Evil, is so enlightening in showing the bigger battle that is raging. And I would just encourage people to be aware of this, that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but, you know, God's hand is not too short. He's won the victory for us. This is a good fight, and I so appreciate the wonderful work you do, Dr. Stan, in courageously informing your listeners of all the matters that you inform them of. I thank you so much for your incredible work.
Well, I think it's just such a privilege that this is happening. I mean, but it already wasn't my doing. I mean, how many people have ever had somebody else build a radio station in their home, build a studio for them, and provide all the things? All I had to do was, of course, come up with the information, which I already had. But I really believe that God's led me into what I'm doing, just as sure as God has led you into what you're doing and giving you a wonderful, wonderful gift for putting together videos. You know, He's given each one of us a gift. He's given you the ability to express through film and through, you know, through commentary a message. He's given me the opportunity, perhaps not very well, but at least to be on the air 5 hours a day and talking to people all across America. And so we look forward to having you on again here in the not-too-distant future to talk about these issues and try to inform the American people about the true nature of the battle we're involved in. So, Carol Matriciana, thank you so very much for being with
us
tonight.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Thank you.
Good night. God bless you. All right, fine. Well, Carol is certainly one of our friends, and we enjoy having her. I hope you enjoy it. And again, her videos are over spiritual warfare, The New Barbarians, and, of course, the other one, of course, we're calling The Gods of Entertainment. And remember again those five mega corporations that dominate the media: Bertelsmann, Fox, Disney, Viacom, and Time Warner. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener supported. And if you would be interested in knowing more about my ministry, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And if you'd like to know more about Carol's videos, and that would be The Spirits of Warfare, The New Barbarians, the story of how they're teaching these poor little kids how to destroy themselves in the name of killing the infidels, which of course is you and I and our Jewish friends over in Israel. And then, of course, to The Gods of Entertainment, all about Hollywood and what Hollywood's real purpose is. And that, of course, is to destroy Christianity. If you'd like to know more about those, you can give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, we do hope many of you would perhaps even want to get one of our newsletters. We'd be glad to send you one free of charge. And I would suggest a real understanding of what's going on today, the occult hierarchy. That's The Occult Hierarchy, Part 2. That's our June newsletter. And it will give you an entirely different perspective of what's going on. Now, if you don't believe there is an occult hierarchy that rules the world, you go up on the Internet, on Google, and type in occult hierarchy, and you'll see my newsletters there. But you'll also see websites put up there by people who are affiliated with the Masters of Wisdom, the Ancient Ones, the Great White Brotherhood, the people who come from the other dimension. Read that they talk about the plan with a capital P. There really are people out there who worship a different God, who are in key positions in our government today. And so go there, pull down my newsletters, read them, copy them. Your job out there in the listening audience is to help us get the truth out across America, because we can only talk 5 hours a day. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs on the Internet there 3 hours a day, and a link to the other programs are on the AmericanNewsNet.com, GCNLive.com. That's AmericanNewsNet or GCNLive.com. And then, of course, you can you can go to our archive programs and listen to those. If you miss any of the programs, they're there. You have our permission to copy them and to distribute them. You can go to our website and pull down our newsletters and copy them and distribute them. And your job is to try to get people out across America to understand what is really taking place today. We hope that many of you will give serious consideration to coming to our annual seminar. It's here in the Monterey Bay area, a beautiful place to visit in October, and it's going to be on the 19th of October at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. And if you're interested, well, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. We're bringing in excellent speakers. We're going to have Brad Dacus. We're going to have a doctor, a radiologist, but he's going to be talking about world population control and vaccination. Fascinating, fascinating information. And the DV kid's going to be there, and I'm going to be there. And we promise you that it'll be an outstanding program. Again, if you're interested in coming, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. But pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
November 19th.
And we'll be right back here. Till next week, may the Lord be with you. Well, that was, remember, that is November 19th of this year, November 19th, and so I hope you can make it.